Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Carol.
How are you?
I'm doing wonderfully today. I have to say up front, though, I feel a little bad that you're in the driver's seat because I know that I have brought you some complex tasks today to get us through the show. So I just want to thank you ahead of time for being in there to navigate all of the things that are coming up.
I know, but I'm excited because I know what's coming up, okay. And I can't wait to hear it.
All right. Well, great. Well, so here's the thing. When I'm at Live Oak each year and in other places when I do interviews with artists or musicians or whoever I'm speaking with, you know, the backstage gets really crazy. Things move quickly, or, you know, equipment's being moved. Artists have to come off the stage and get paid and, you know, relax. And then the next artist comes up. And so part of the task or trick of my job backstage is to fit in these interviews that I do before the next performance starts, because it gets too loud to do any interviewing, and to catch the artist before they leave, or that would be helpful,
yeah.
But also to give them time to relax and, you know, to settle in. And so over the, you know, last few years, I have a few brief snippets of interviews, things that were, you know, interviews that were cut short because of music or time. We only got to get, you know, have 10 minutes together maybe. But a lot of them have 10 minutes of really interesting or profound or poignant kind of nuggets in them. And I was trying to figure out, you know, what will I do with these? And then I realized that coming up on Friday is a benefit for the station, White Oak. Wait, Winter Oak, not White Oak. Winter Oak, Roots Rising.
Yes, the Roots Rising concert.
Yes, this Friday night at CPAC. And Liz Weiss is one of the featured performers. And Liz happens to be one of the people that I have my 10-minute snippets with, interviews with. So I thought, well, there we go. That's perfect. I pulled together my conversation with Liz and some of her music. And then I also pulled up some of my other short favorites. One is with Joe Purdy. He's a folk singer, very soulful, kind of the Woody Guthrie genre, very much about, you know, sending out a message to the world. He's one of the few people really actively owning that he's writing revolutionary songs today, which is great. Another brief interview with Soul Scratch, a couple members of Soul Scratch, Dale and Matt. And that one was just lighthearted and fun because we really didn't have a lot of time, and you'll hear that they're fun.
Well, I can't wait to hear these because I remember seeing you last year backstage. And you would take, you know, you'd be sitting back at one of those tables at Live Oak with the group. But I was thinking, well, I want to eavesdrop.
You get to eavesdrop today. You'll get to hear what we talked about in the corners there. The Soul Scratch was a fun interview, but they also are now, you know, moving more towards writing music with a social message or with the intention of bringing about peace and love and togetherness into the world. And then my last little snippet is with Proxima Parada, Nick and Kevin and Josh and Aaron. And it was the first time I met them. And I've had Nick on the show now a few times over the last couple of years because we really hit it off that day. But I never played this little interview because it was short and, you know, I didn't know where to fit it. But it now is kind of nice to play this 2 years later because they just had the big album release party over the weekend and they were out on a van band tour a couple times this last year. And so they've really, you know, kind of seen big changes and growth in their music. So those are the four different artists that we're going to hear from today. And I did want to mention that the Winter Oak Roots Rising Festival is featuring Matt Anderson and Gabby Moreno and Liz Weiss. And if you want tickets, you can get them at Boo Boo's or through Ticketfly.
Eventbrite.com.
And it's this Friday at 7 p.m. And it's at CPAC in the new auditorium. It's just beautiful.
Oh, it's a great venue. It's so easy.
Yeah.
Drive in, you park, you go in.
You walk in,
no problems.
So I do want to mention that is Friday night. And so if I had to come up with a theme for today's show, what ties, besides them being shorter interviews, between 6 and 10 minutes, each of these artists is really committed to using their voice, their lyrics, their time on stage to uplift people, which is what Liz is doing through a kind of fusion of a gospel and R&B music, to make people aware of social issues like Joe Purdy, and then to help people kind of change their own awareness, their own alignment to the universe. And that's, you know, kind of Soul Scratch and Proxima Prada are trying to bring that about. And so it was wonderful to listen to all four of these and realize that all four of these artists have kind of the same vision about what they're bringing to the world through their music, besides just the fun of being musicians and being together and sharing their story. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we won't be opening the phone lines today officially because I have a lot of interviews to pull through, but you can always, you know, call and leave a message for me or ask a question. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Or follow us on our Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. And thanks to my daughters for really keeping the Instagram going. I highly recommend checking it out because I have pictures of myself with the artists and also a little bit of their music playing on the story. So that's Elizabeth_TRT. And also on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, also pictures of the artists and information about the show. And then you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or listen to podcasts by podcasting the show. Visit Apple Podcasts or NPR Podcasts, wherever you find them. Find A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe. And then the show will be there waiting so you can listen at your convenience. But before we jump in, I know we have some breaking news. So Carol, go ahead and let us know what's going on.
Yeah, we just got this from the KCBX newsroom. Thousands of Central Coast residents and businesses are without power this afternoon. And it was at about 1:30. PG&E says they had a malfunction at their Templeton substation. 19,300 customers are without power. And this includes Atascadero, Morro Bay, and Cambria, as well as the Cal Poly and Cuesta campuses. And a PG&E spokesperson says the company is investigating the issue and they hope to have power restored as soon as possible. And KCBX News will just keep an eye on the outage and we will have an update for you at 3 o'clock.
Thank you.
Sure.
And yes, we will keep you updated. And it's a good time to have your radio in your car going.
Absolutely.
That good old-fashioned transistor radio on batteries to always keep us informed. So, all right, let's jump in with this now, Liz. Carol, we're going to start with the Liz Weiss interview, but I'd like to start first, if you can, with some of Liz Weiss's music. Pure Religion we'll start off with, and then we'll go into the interview. And you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. This is Liz Weiss.
You're gonna need that pure religion, hallelujah. Gonna need that pure religion, hallelujah. You're gonna need that pure religion gonna carry you through. You're gonna need that pure religion, hallelujah.
So you're listening to Liz Weiss, Pure Religion. And I met Liz backstage at Live Oak Music Festival the summer before last. And it was interesting, funny, that the whole weekend I had her on my list. I really want to meet this woman, Liz Weiss. I loved her story. She was from Portland. She was living in Brooklyn. She kind of found her way into music late after having other careers. And every time I would go someplace, they'd say, oh, she was just here. And, oh, wait, you just missed her. Oh, you just missed her set. And I was so disappointed. And so I went backstage and I just plopped down on the couch and I was scrolling through, you know, my phone and looking at my recorder, and this gal and a friend came and plopped down next to me and they started talking, and I turned and I said, I was hoping to meet Liz Weiss and I'm sad that I missed her set. And she said, well, I'm Liz Weiss. And I said, oh, well, then I guess this is where we're supposed to be this afternoon. So let's pick up with my conversation with Liz Weiss backstage at Live Oak Music Festival. So I'm with Liz Feiss, and we were meant to be. And we're backstage. We're going to grab a couple minutes. So, Liz, for people who aren't familiar with your story and how you came to be traveling and singing, give a little background.
Well, it's only been since January of 2014, mm-hmm. and it's easy to forget that it's only been a little over 3.5 years. So I went to film school after I got a kidney transplant. I can't even talk after.
I didn't understand what that word was.
I'm like trying to rush and like sound professional at the same time.
We're in no hurry.
I'm like, I'm gonna just give her she too much that. So I got sick, and I was sick for a long time, and my kidneys started to fail, and I didn't think I would live past 19, and my health just got worse and worse. Until I just...
And it was a mystery? Nobody knew?
I mean, it's an autoimmune disease that caused the kidneys to fail. But, like, that was my teen years. It was from the age of 15 till about 22 that I really had to dabble with death, like dancing with death, going to sleep with death, never knowing if you're going to wake up. And I think now, like, I see my mom and I see other people who know me, who see me now, who saw me then. I want to know their story, their point of view. So I went to film school. I wanted to tell stories of hope and redemption in a way that didn't degrade people's differences. I wanted to be an actress, but I didn't want to play a teen mom or a slave. I'm just being honest. And I wanted to make movies that my niece could look and watch and say, wow, she looks like me. And so I did that for 7 years, and I started going to a church when I was in my mid-20s. And I really connected to that community. It was young. I saw people who loved Jesus who were doing awesome things like photography and graphic design work and filmmaking and musicians and music that didn't suck and wasn't like, everything is great, nothing ever goes wrong, and yes, I'm going through this, but it'll be fine. Sometimes you just have to let yourself mourn. Mm-hmm. And I felt like there was so much honesty and humanness in that community. And I started singing on the worship team. And the pastor was like, I have these songs that I wrote, and I want to keep them for myself, but I think they belong to you. And I was like, I don't sing in front of people, but I'll do this if you give it away. Like, you're going to give it away for free, whatever. I'll do this and then go back to film. And we had one show at Mississippi Studios, and it sold out in 10 days. And the buyer was like, hey, would you be interested in opening up for Cody Chestnut? And I'm like, I'm not a musician. I only did this one thing. I don't do this. But I kept saying yes, because I was curious as to why people would hire me to sing these songs about Jesus. Even though they would say, I don't believe in Jesus, but I love your message, and there's something familiar about your sound. And I remember when I got invited to play at this place called Dante's, that I really got a little foreshadowing of what it is that I'm supposed to do in music. And Dante's is in like high human trafficking area of downtown Portland, lots of prostitution. They have strip shows there, and they wanted me, Liz Feiss, mm-hmm. to go sing songs about Jesus in this place. And I was like, I can't tell anyone from my church that I said yes to this. But people from different church communities came, and they just joined in with the rest of the people. And it was then that I got to see these people who didn't know me or my story come together, standing next to each other, and I had the opportunity to sing songs of hope over them. And it wasn't, let me save you, let me change you. It was, I see you, you're loved, and I have the freedom to love you. And it is something that I have to remind myself of when I am dead tired, when I feel like I have nothing to give. Even singing here today, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm melting on stage, mm-hmm. and My eyes are closed for a little too long. I think they're melting together. But these people are coming and they're dancing. So let's just do this. God, just give me the energy to do this. Bring people together. Hold hands. Hold them in the air. We are in this together or we will fall together. So, yeah.
So is the inspiration to spread Jesus or to spread music? Or to spread love, or to spread Liz?
I think the inspiration is to use a gift that I was given to spread love through me as a vessel, which is scary. It's so vulnerable and raw. And I can't defend the gospel. I can't say things that will I'm not trying to convince people of anything. But my story of growing up the way I did, my story of basically face-to-face with death, my story of wanting to bring people together, my story of taking risk with no plan B, that's what I think I'm supposed to do, is just utilize the gifts that I was given to bring people together.
That's Liz Weiss singing Pure Religion, and that was my conversation with Liz backstage at Live Oak Music Festival, and you'll get a chance to see Liz on Friday night, February the 15th, at the PAC at Cuesta, CPAC at Cuesta College, for a benefit for KCBX called Winter Oak Roots Rising. So if you're interested, check that out. And Liz is just the first of four different short interviews that I'm sharing with you today that took place backstage. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, it can be tough to grab these long interviews because so much happens so quickly. And as you can hear in the background, there's, you know, musicians warming up and people walking by. And so sometimes I have to just settle for the drive-by conversations that I get to have. And so this second interview is with Joe Purdy. And Joe was in a hurry to get out because he had another music festival to go to after this performance. And so we did kind of a walk and talk conversation on the way out to the bus. But I really wanted to talk to Joe because when he was in the merch booth afterwards signing CDs, so many people came up with tears in their eyes. They were absolutely moved by his music and by him. And I really wanted to get a chance to kind of hear his own words and also ask him what I'd been asking a lot of musicians, which was, who's writing the music for the next revolution? Who is writing music to inspire people to take action in this next wave of environmental, political, social movements that need to happen that are occurring. And of course, you know, he had some thoughts on this. So you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And we're going to start off with some of Joe Purdy's music, This American, and then we'll go into our interview. Carol, so if we could grab Joe Purdy's song, This American, that'd be great.
And all you children, a privilege, 'cause I am one of you. As born on dirt road, out in the country, now wanted for nothing, no trouble did I see. So do not pretend that you understand all the troubles that others been through. Don't point your fingers and so freely judge all the ones who ain't as privileged as you.
So I caught up with Joe Purdy as he was kind of heading out of Live Oak, and the thing I was shouting to him as we were walking, I really didn't have to shout. He was quite lovely and great to talk to. But I wanted to say, you know, is having good vibes enough? Because I had asked him earlier about kind of the feeling of being at music festivals and people are coming to have a good time. And, you know, is just being around a lot of people feeling good enough to make a difference? And so that's where we're going to start off our conversation today with Joe Purdy. Carol, if you're ready. This is Joe.
When we talk about mental health and energy and, you know, the kind of the global feeling that people have, is good vibes enough? Like, do you feel like you're adding to some energy force around the world that's healing in any way?
It depends on how I'm feeling.
Okay.
Sometimes you do, you know, sometimes you feel like you're doing what you can, and sometimes I don't feel like I'm doing enough, and sometimes I feel like what I'm doing doesn't matter, and sometimes I feel like it really does. So it really depends on where I'm at. But it's important to me to keep trying, for sure. I think, obviously, good vibes on their own around the world, I don't think it's enough to save us. But I think it's better than the alternative, and I do think it helps. I absolutely believe that it helps.
So as a musician, were you drawn to this work from an altruistic helper place or more of a personal vocation or drive?
You know, I just love music. Yeah. I mean, as so many do. But when I started, when I was younger, it was something, songwriting was just something that happened. You know, I wasn't as young as most people when they start writing. I was almost 21 when my first song kind of fell out, but it really did fall out. And then there was really no question that that was what I was going to do. And I was convinced at the time that was a really good song, whether it was or not, in retrospect. But I never stopped writing. And so, you know, 16 records later,
16.
A lot of coasters. Yeah, yeah. I think my social conscience has woken up in the last few years, more than ever. And I think when I realized that I was living in a time that was every bit as explosive and divisive and inspiring as the 60s were, which is the place where all the most wonderful protest music and social consciousness happened, with, you know, with the Woody Guthries and the Pete Seegers and the Dylan and Joan Baez and Judy Collins, and I always felt like that the best songs by the best people had already been done, and I didn't live in a time where that was needed or that I could ever do it in any way as good as they can, and I can't. I can't do it as good as they can. But when I did realize that, once it started to become very apparent that we're still sharing the exact same problems, and in an arguably bigger way now, but certainly just as important way, then it kind of became impossible for me to sit it out in good conscience when I at all thought I had an ability to say something worth a shit.
Well, and I'm so happy you said that, because I've asked artists a lot the last few years, where is the soundtrack to the revolution? Because there is that same energy blowing up all over the world. Probably blowing up isn't the right term, but...
No, I understand.
And you're one of the first people that I've talked to that actually has said, I feel the need and desire to be a part of that soundtrack. And this new album that you have, you even said is a departure, is like, it's specifically geared towards being a soundtrack in some ways.
Yeah, it's my first social conscious, you know, civil rights record. But it's the time for that, clearly. And it's just trying to find a way to be articulate enough to where maybe it actually works in some way for someone. Or at least opens up a conversation. It just beats not trying, I think. Even if you fumble all over it, you still have to try.
Do you feel like you sleep a little better because you've put this work out into the world?
No.
Okay.
No, because it hasn't changed anything in a large way yet, you know. Maybe if I played this record on Saturday Night Live and it made a big splash and people started being nicer to each other because of it, but I haven't seen that. I've seen it in a lot of small ways, and the people that I've played it for, and I've got a lot of nice, I had some really wonderful conversations with people who agreed with me and didn't agree with me, and that's what I was setting out for too. So I think I'm doing my small part, and I'll continue to try to do my small part, but no, we're never done. If you know, if you're smart enough to know that it'll never, in our lifetime, it'll never be enough, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't keep trying.
I feel like we've been on this, we think that there's pockets of revolutionary actions that happen, but I think it's just been one long, slow roll since the Middle Ages, since the Awakening, since the Great Enlightenment, that I feel like it's just, I don't think people recognize it, it's just one long, energetic movement with forward and backward momentum.
I'd agree with that, absolutely, yeah.
I also never had an artist who had almost every person come up to the table and said, I was crying through the whole set. and so is this a common theme, that people hear your music and cry? And are they crying because of the joy, or that you're awakening that consciousness in them?
Well, I wouldn't begin to pretend why other people feel the way that they do.
True, but, good point.
But I think feeling anything, you know, when I hear music that does something that really hits a spot, sometimes it's joy and sometimes it's the opposite, or sometimes it's coping, or but whatever the emotion is, when you hear, there's something about that emotion mixed with a melody that can always make you cry, if that makes sense.
It does.
Music is like the world's biggest Hallmark card. You
true.
Know, if you just, you can't, like, you know, it's like a lifetime movie, you know, you can always find a way to cry at it, you know, even if it makes you really happy. It's just like anytime there's some little bit of recognition of yourself in something, or a thought that you've had, or something you've been through, but when you mix that with the right melody, there's a right combination of notes that can just tear you up, mm-hmm. and just go straight to that spot. It's magic. There's science behind it, but it's, I'd rather just believe it's magic because it feels like it. Yeah,
I like the magic because clearly there's a lot of people that are feeling moved, and I do believe that those vibes and energy get out there and will make a difference.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
If you've never been harassed by the ones who should protect you, if you've never been mistreated for the color of your skin, then listen, all you children of privilege, 'cause I am one of you. And I had a good mother, she taught me to love. And I had a good father, and he taught me to work hard. And together they showed me respect for all people, regardless of class, and regardless of background, regardless of race, no matter their religion or their preference in part. 'Cause every human being will have their own story, as important as the other who walks right beside or across their own city, across this great country, across the blue waters to lands far and wide. Well, I ain't saying that I can't whip you. I ain't saying I ain't already fought. I'm just trying to have more compassion and lead by example, and to turn from my temper, not to give in to anger, not to add to the violence and cause great divide between me and my neighbor, between me and my brothers, between me and my sisters. 'Cause there's too many suffering and there's too many dying in this world without reason, in this world without
You're listening to Joe Purdy's song, This American. And that was our conversation backstage at Live Oak. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. And today I'm bringing to you a series of short interviews, conversations I had, backstage banter with four different artists. We started with Liz Weiss, and we just talked with Joe Purdy. He's an American singer-songwriter from Arkansas, and he actually made his acting debut in the 2018 film American Folk that I'm not familiar with. But we'd be curious to see after revisiting some of his music again. And from that snippet that you heard today, you can see why people were so moved when they got to see him live. Coming up, we're going to have conversations with the two members of the band Soul Scratch, which has a whole different tenor than my last two conversations. This was a little more reverent than the other ones because they're just those kind of guys, and it was a lot of fun. And then we'll close out the show today talking to the members of Proxima Parada. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and Carol, I think, has a quick update.
Yeah, this is good news. PG&E representative says that all customers that were affected by Templeton substation malfunction have had their power restored, and the company is still looking into the cause of the outage.
That's good news. Yeah. Thank you very much. Although I'm not opening the phones officially today, you are welcome to call if you have a question or comment. Carol's there to grab the phone at 805-781-3875. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow us on our Instagram. Our Instagram stream, my daughters keep that up, and there's some great photos of the musicians and some music by each of them running today. And if you follow our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, we do updates of the shows and have pictures of the different guests. And as always, you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org. You can find all 10 years of my shows back there to listen to, or you can podcast the show to listen at your convenience by visiting Apple Podcasts or NPR, wherever you find your podcast, hit subscribe, and the show will be there. So the theme for today with all these artists, and it really happened by happy accident, is that each of these artists had some calling to doing music that they didn't really know was there until they already were in their on their journey, following their path, figuring out who they were. And each of them found that although music had found them, they found themselves in the music, if that makes sense. And each of them have found that part of their calling is to make some sort of social change. And so Soul Scratch is a kind of a funk band with a high amount of energy. And their website says that Soul Search is rooted in the principle that through the healing power of music, the world may be made into a joyous, loving place where all of humanity can come together under the umbrella of love and togetherness. And so the original band members are Soul Scratch, Johnny, Joel, and Adam. But I happened to meet up with Matt and Dale at the merch booth, and well, let's start with a little bit of their music, Carol, and then we'll go into the conversation. So this is Soul Scratch and their song, America. Chat with us too?
Can I run to the bathroom real quick?
Yeah, it's super right around the corner. Yeah,
thank you.
Do you want to talk about Dale while he's in the bathroom?
Sure, I'll talk about Dale while he's in the bathroom. This is the perfect person.
Yes, come have a seat in my office.
This is gonna be great.
Tell me your name.
Oh, I'm the one. I'm the guy.
I loved having the guy in my office. I'm Elizabeth. Steph, tell me your name.
I'm Matt Reale from Soul Scratch, and I play trumpet.
You do?
I do.
And so what brought you to Soul Scratch, and why the trumpet?
You know what? I met one of their members, the second guitarist at the time, in a bathroom.
Of course.
And we were standing next to each other at the urinals, and we started talking. I told him that I played trumpet. He said, we're looking for a trumpet player. I said, great, I'll start on Tuesday. And I did, and that was it. That was about 10 years ago, and it was awesome. It was at one of their gigs, and I've never looked back and regretted it for a second.
And two questions.
Yeah.
One, I thought there was a code about urinals and men's rooms that you're not supposed to look at or speak to the person next to you.
100%. We were looking straight at the wall the entire time. So I didn't know what he looked like until we left the bathroom. And then I took a gander at his face and I was sold.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
And then how did your parents react to you heading out on the road, playing your trumpet for a living?
I come from a family of artists. My mom's a musician, my dad's an actor, so they were very supportive. I've been doing music my entire life. It's exactly what I was supposed to be doing.
I love that. Did like at 10, the trumpet was your vibe? Or
did
you start
10
off
or
on
11,
piano? Or what?
My mom's a bass player, classical bass player. So I started with that and learning music, understanding the generic notes and theory of it all. And then I finally gravitated to the trumpet when I was in sixth grade. And that was it.
I love it. So is it your first love?
No, that would be my mom and my dad.
I love that. And so how is it traveling in this mixed marriage of musicians full time? How do you guys make that work?
We are all brothers in arms.
Really?
And so there's a great dynamic for each one of us having the friendship for quite some time, and not only our friendship that binds us, but the music. And every once in a while there's tensions on both sides, and they all work out great. We're pretty lucky. We've been doing this for a long time, and there hasn't been any major glitches in this band at all.
Because isn't that kind of what goes along with traveling in a band? There's supposed to be some sort of arm wrestling, or at some point it just didn't happen, huh?
Of course. I mean, when you're making art together as six individuals, it can be hard. A painter is working by himself, just painting a piece. That's a little different than us working together in collaboration as a team. And sometimes there's rubs, and one person wants to go one way, one person wants to go another, and eventually you just meet together in the middle and you make a song.
And so are you a solo man on the planet, or are you partnered up in some way?
I have a beautiful wife and a really fantastic human 3.5-year-old named Ellis.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Like my granddaughter. All right. So how do you make that work then? Because that's always the question, right, on everyone's mind. How do you do both things well?
It's tough. As I left and was getting to the jumping off point this morning, I got a call from my wife saying that he just stubbed his toe and started bleeding profusely and maybe need to go to the hospital and get stitches.
Oh.
And he didn't, thankfully, so he's good. But at that moment, I was like, oh my God, I'm leaving to go do this and I can't be there for him. But it's a team effort, and everybody does what they have to do to make it all work.
So how did you get your wife to buy into this life of yours?
She was there. She was there that night when I met the person at the urinal.
Really?
Who got me into the van. So she's been full force from day one.
I'm so glad
that was the first story
to catch that. I have no, like, I don't even know that story. That's a story before me.
That's a story before Dale.
That's a pre-Dale story.
Pre-Dale. There was a lot of band stuff that was pre-Dale.
So how did they find you, Dale?
I was doing stand-up comedy for a few years, and this guy Adam, who had seen my comedy show, I bumped into him at some bar, Carl Strauss, I think, at Universal City Walk, and I was doing a set headlining at the John Lovitz Comedy Club that used to be there. And he came up and watched it and loved it, and I believe he was managing or booking some shows for these guys at the time. So he asked if I wanted to open for him, and so I went out and I opened for him doing like stand-up comedy and my comedy songs and stuff, and got talking to him. These guys, never remembered me, Did it two times. Their lead singer at the time remembered me once, and that was nice. The rest of them, they just wouldn't give me the time of day. But then I found out that they were looking for a new lead singer, and they were having auditions, so I went and auditioned, and they're much better off.
Yep.
Wait, so was this like a dream for you to join a band, or was stand-up, and like, did you have to give up one dream to follow this?
I don't know if anybody would call it a dream to see these guys twice a week, at least. Or, but yeah, no, this is what I do. This is what I've always wanted to do, is make music. You know, I have the best time in the world when I'm playing with these guys, but I do make music other places as well.
Okay.
But this is where home is. You know, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, and this is where I want to be, and the kind of music I want to make, and the kind of jerks I'm stuck with are the kinds that I want to be stuck with for the rest of the journey, you know?
And so do you have other gigs besides Soul Scratch as well? Or do you all, what do you call it, Moonlight?
I mean, Everybody makes music in whatever. The majority of the music we make is Soul Scratch.
Okay.
You know, we're grinding it out every week, but everybody is creative. Everybody has things that they do and bring something fresh to the table every time that we write a song, and that's what helps keep the band fresh, because the spirit is rooted in what we are. These guys are destroying it right now.
Yes.
While I'm trying to finish a sentence.
And it was a beautiful spirited thought.
We're rooted in what we started in, but everybody has a different little taste or a different little flavor that they bring to the mix. So we've all come from different backgrounds. I grew up doing musical theater and doing, you know, church music. Matt grew up playing trumpet in concert band. I played saxophone in concert band. We were both in marching bands. Him out in California, me in Boston, just north of Boston. But everybody's got different backgrounds that they come to, and it brings it all together and makes it really something that's kind of unique and special.
I love that. So are you a solo journeyer, or are you partnered up on this ride?
There's nobody in my life but these idiots, and it's severely depressing.
Okay. Would that be your Tinder profile?
Yeah, severely depressed singer seeks camaraderie outside of bandmates.
Exactly. All right, so then I have to ask the therapist question, because I don't know if you heard me say that I'm a psychotherapist.
You mentioned it.
Okay,
so I went in with open eyes. I knew.
So here is the question I have to ask everyone.
You seem crazy. Do you feel crazy?
Well, you said, I was. When you said stand-up comic, I went, ooh, what's your neurosis? Because isn't that underlying all comics?
I mean, do I have to pick one?
Do you have a favorite, I guess, on the menu?
Oh, man. I mean, not thinking highly of oneself is always just top flight, I feel, you know. Finding yourself is always a tough journey, and I'm thankful that in my 30s I feel like I've kind of done it.
Love that.
Definitely more of a recent last couple years development, but kind of that, like, I don't get this is who I am.
Are you 35 by chance?
I'm not, but thank you for thinking that. I'm pretty sure it's these gray temples that have been pissing me off all week, but that's cool. I'm 33. Last year I thought I was turning 34, and then when I time traveled and realized that I was turning 33, it was...
Was it something that your mother held back from you, that you were born a year?
That I was 33? No, not at all. No, my mom didn't hold. My mom couldn't hold back. I was born in the car. She was in labor for like 15 minutes. I was like, get me the fuck out of here, man.
Because you were in a hurry to get somewhere, clearly on stage.
On the side of Route 62 in Danvers, Massachusetts,
really?
In the front seat of a Volkswagen Quantum.
Was it the same vehicle you were conceived in, or?
That's my joke. You're the only person that's ever gone there. God, I hope not. What's great, though,
maybe
is my dad's boss at the time, when he heard that I was born in the car, he said to him, he was like, well, I was going to get you some toys or something, but now I think I'll buy you some seat covers.
And I was like, well, yeah, I love that.
That's great, yeah.
All right, so is there a there for Soul Scratch? Like, you'll say, oh, we're there. What's the there? Is there
No. We've always... Our destination is wherever we're at. We write the songs that we write, and we fall in love with those, and then we present them to people, and that's what we do. We don't want to put any kind of goals, because then it puts us in weird places. So we just try to play good music and make people feel good.
And evolve constantly. Yeah. I mean, like, a lot of the songs we wrote or played today in the main stage set, and a lot we'll play later, are quote-unquote brand new songs, you know, because they're off the next album that we're recording right now. But to us, we're already writing the next album.
Right.
You know, we're already working on tunes for the next thing as well. We're just trying to get all these down and keep all the inspiration flowing and get all the ideas that are just popping out down in some way, to just to keep on moving and always just keep doing it.
I'm so very glad.
I think we're going to have to say, I'm so glad I got to talk to you, before people. This ended. I really enjoyed your set, this. And I wish you well. Fantastic. It was good to meet you. Thank you.
Yeah, really, thank you so much. What's wrong with the world today?
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And that was my conversation with Dale and Matt from Soul Scratch and their song America. And today I'm just sharing with you short interviews that I've grabbed over the last year or so. Sometimes there's not enough time to get a full interview, and I'm always so sad because I don't know what to do with the smaller little brief conversations. But today was the perfect day to share them with you, because each of these artists actually had something in common, even though their music was quite different. But all of them talked about in their interviews about wanting to do something to make a change, to make the world a better place, that their music kind of came through them as a vehicle for either inspiring others, uplifting others, bringing about social awareness, and that along with having a great time and sharing their music, they also hoped that they were doing something to make the world a better place. So my last conversation is with Proxima Parada, local guys here, San Luis Obispo, met at Cal Poly, and they actually just had a new album release party on Saturday for their vinyl, Kind Reminder. And I first met them when they were opening for Michael Franti 2 years ago at Live Oak, and we had a great conversation, although very short, cut short. But I knew that I was going to enjoy getting to know them and watching their career unfold as it has over the last couple years as they've grown and started touring and signed with management. And I'm happy to share this conversation and a little bit of their music from their new album, Must Have Been a Ghost. We'll start with that, Carol, and then we'll jump to the interview. Horrible things happen, but the work we're going to do, the exercise, is how to be joyful and sure. Recognize it. Instead of saying life's goal is to be joyful all the time and that depression is wrong.
Right. I totally agree. I think learning to suffer well is a really amazing skill to develop, and it takes a lot of practice. You know, when I'm having a hard day, or when I'll say suffering or depressed or something, to not equate that to therefore this is bad. That's the error. Trying to draw any conclusions about the feeling, but just like, oh yeah, that's the feeling I'm feeling.
Right. Instead of making it now, this is who I am, and define yourself by what you're feeling for a short period of time.
Yeah.
So tell me about the vibe of the band, and what is it you're striving for when you came together and said let's make this art. Our life. What was the pact you made? If It's funny how it started.
It's funny how it started and then what it's become today, I think.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense that we were originally just drawn to playing music together because it was joyous, like you said. And I think what's kept us here for this long and what the hunger that drives us to keep improving is that we feel like our music can actually have a positive impact on the world. So we can actually contribute to the healing of the planet. And that feels like, wow, we're actually doing something important. It's not just like, oh, we're having fun, you know? Like, oh, this is great. This is great fun, which is a great place to start.
Right.
But now that we can create meaning.
Yeah. Well, when we first started, it was like we didn't really have any direction or any plan. We were just kind of doing whatever was fun at the time, and that was playing music, playing shows. And now we've all kind of matured and grown a little bit over 5 or 6 years, and we kind of have more of a direction of things we want to do, you know, playing music and where in life we want that to take us.
And where is that? Do you know? What is the Holy Grail?
Hopefully playing more music.
But I mean, is there kind of a Holy Grail for the band that you say, if when we get here, we'll feel like we've...
I don't think we kind of subscribe to that, because you can just keep saying that, you know, when we get here. Mm-hmm. You know, a long time ago, it was like when we can play at the local venue downtown, or when we can stop playing at a coffee shop, when can we play at the next thing, when can we play at Live Oak, when can we play, you know, those little steps are what we want to keep striving towards. You know, so for us, the next one's probably like, when can we keep playing more festivals like Live Oak?
Yeah.
You know, when can we play all the California festivals?
Yeah.
That'd be a huge success for us.
Yeah, just like little steps. And it's so funny that our band name has kind of become like a little bit of a philosophy for us. We're always, you know, just looking at the next stop. We don't have to be like, oh, where are we going to be in 20 years? What do we want to create?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we're like this step right now, playing at Live Oak, we're happy. We're fulfilled. This is wonderful.
So you're good at the in-the-moment piece of it. Like, you're good at sitting and recognizing where you're at.
This has been a hard work to get to that, to be able to celebrate these little moments and not always be striving and striving. I think that causes a lot of suffering, too.
Yeah.
Right? If we're like, no, this Live Oak doesn't mean anything. We only will be happy when we're playing at this festival or that festival.
Yeah.
And we don't get to appreciate Live Oak, right?
Right. Or to feel the pressure that once you've booked this gig, you're already forward to the next gig, and you never pay attention to actually.
Totally.
And I think that's what the trap that most of us get into is, always next stopping it in our life.
Yeah.
And you know.
Certainly. And it's very easy to talk about, oh, you know, appreciate the moment, live in the present. These are very easy things to intellectualize and say, but to actually, when we start to look at it carefully from moment to moment, I can be so easily caught up in the past or lost in the future. Mm-hmm. So even today, right now, thinking, oh, we have to set up our gear. Oh, we have to set up merchandise. Mm-hmm. But that's still not the present moment. The present moment is right here in this interview. Not even our performance later.
Right.
So it's an incredible skill that takes, I still feel like a beginner myself.
Well, I don't think you can ever master that.
Yeah.
Like, it's never not going to happen.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
That you're going to feel sidetracked or.
Yeah, we just got to keep jumping on the horse, getting back on.
Getting kicked off.
Oh, I got lost in the past. Oh, I'm stuck in the future right now. Okay, let me come back on to the present.
So when you're writing music, is that a exercise of being in the present?
Yeah, I mean, that's like getting lost in a different realm usually.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I think it's very present. Yeah, it feels maybe some of the most joyful times.
So are you someone who writes music, sits down, comes out, or is it a process of time?
Kind of depends on the song. I think my favorite songs are the ones that I feel like I just got to catch up to it. It's flowing out, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to write this down, right?
Do you come from musical families? Are your families supportive of this quest that you're on?
Aaron? I don't know how to answer that question.
Do your parents know that you're doing this? Are they going to hear your voice and be concerned that you're not working at Google?
The ruse is up.
Yes, exactly. Aaron's been busted.
Oh, I only wear glasses to make them think I work in the tech industry. I actually can see really well. But it's hurting my eyes because I wear these prescription lenses that I don't need. And I get beat up, you know, in the lunchroom. And it's hard. It's really
so you're
hard.
A little bit like the Superman of rock music,
very
or music
much so.
World.
Like a very thin, weak Superman.
But wasn't Clark Kent a little like under, you know, stated during the day, and then gets out in the world?
Oh, is that true? Looked like Superman.
I mean,
looked
great. Beefcake's still a beefcake.
Thank you.
You put beef. You cook glass on a beefcake. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Still nice.
Still a beefcake.
So is anyone's parents excited or supportive of this venture you're on?
That's a good question.
I mean, I think my parents are happy for me that I'm doing this. I don't know if they are like 100% in approval. They're a little more conservative in that end of things, but they're happy for me for sure.
My mom really loves music, and she sings, and she's actually written a couple of the songs that we perform. And,
oh, really?
So I think she's really proud that that I'm investing a lot of time and energy into music. And my dad's just happy that I'm alive. Like he's just always kind of like, good job, son. You know, you're doing better than I did. You know, so just the fact that I'm, you know, living a clean, positive life, I think, is what matters to him.
And so. Yeah, that's a kind of a gift of being released by parents.
Yeah.
You know, and the expectations that. Kind of nope. fall by the wayside, and all of a sudden you're free to kind of experience who you were meant to be.
Sure.
And I think a lot of times as parents, and I don't know if you look like your father, but, you know, we want to live a little vicariously through our children. And when you take a path that feels more freeing than the path maybe we chose as parents, for me there's some excitement in that.
Yeah,
it's like, yes, burst out into the world.
Yeah,
I don't want to be unfair. I mean, it's not any one thing, and I certainly have inherited probably a fair amount of my ability to worry about a lot of things from my parents, so it's understandable.
But did they buy you your first drum kit?
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's a lot of love to let your child choose drums as their instrument of choice.
That's true. I didn't actually start playing until I was in college, really.
Oh, really?
So I was 18 and with Kevin in the dorms at Cal Poly. And they didn't have to go through that part of me being really awful at home.
Down in the basement.
Yeah.
Twanging away.
You had other awful things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So...
Sorry, but not today. A sign of life would bring relief. Oh, even a thank you. But no, thank you. Goodbye. Take care. I already got one.
You've been listening to Proxima Prada. Must Have Been a Ghost from their new release, Kind Reminder. And I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And you can get your tickets to see Liz Weiss at Winter Oak Rising Roots for this Friday night, the 15th. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll go out with some Proxima Prada.
Today, all the horses run a bit faster, so I know if you want, baby, you give me an answer. See, my problem is I want you to know who I am. Must have been a ghost. I don't see no one.